The Instructor Podcast with Terry Cook, talking with leaders, innovators, experts and game changers about what drives them.
Welcome back to the Instructor Podcast. As always, I am your splendid host, Terry Cook. I'm delighted to be here, but even more delighted that you have chosen to listen, because this is episode 2 of the In Conversation series with Lee Jowett. And this time we're digging into a deceptively simple question: what actually matters in this industry? Not what gets the most likes, not what keeps us comfortable, but what genuinely affects the people who end up on the road once L plates come off. This conversation moves beyond techniques and tests and into outcomes. Safer drivers, better training, and whether the systems you work in really support the things we say we care about. As with the first episode, this isn't rushed, it isn't scripted, and it isn't trying to please everyone. It's a proper, thoughtful discussion, and at times, an uncomfortable one. Now, a quick reminder before we get started that these In Conversation series is released early and ad-free for members of the Instructor Podcast Premium, also known internally as IPP. Premium members get first access to long-form conversations like this, plus exclusive sessions, expert input, and space to actually develop, not just consume content and move on. Now, if these are the kinds of conversations you want more of, Premium is where they live. So head to the link in the show notes or go straight to patreon.com/theinstructor to find out more. But for now, let's get into part 2 of In Conversation with Lee Jowett. Okay, so we are once again joined by Lee Jowett. How are we doing, Lee?
Yeah, good. Thank you, Terry.
Excellent. Well, when we were discussing what to talk about, one of the things that you suggested was what's important. So I'm going to start with that kind of broad question. What's important in our industry?
What's important in our industry? Many things. Lots of things are really, really, really important. I've never put them into a sort of chat or a league, so that'd maybe be something that'd be quite interesting to do. But I think, like any industry, any system of training, what's important is what comes out the other end of it. So in relation to what we do, then obviously it's what goes onto the roads, and what happens on the roads as a result of the training that we deliver. Now, there are many things that can go into creating what comes out the end, and there are many things maybe that don't go into creating what comes out the other end. But ultimately, if I've got to give an answer on what's important on our industry, it's what comes out the end of it. You know, I think for me personally, that at times, you know, you can look at it and think, you can look at it and go, okay, well, if I say this, that might upset this many thousands of driving instructors, or me doing this. You know, there are things that we're doing, or things that I'm doing, that potentially could impact. I'm not saying it will, but potentially could impact the way that PDIs are assessed in terms of qualifying, and potentially could and would change what's necessary for them to be able to deliver. But ultimately, as far as I see it, the only thing that's important is what comes out at the other end, you know, because if you make a change to anything, if you make a change to the test, you make a change to the training, and that impacts on the outcome. So for me personally, what's important is what we do to put people in a position to not kill themselves and the other people that are in the vehicle or other vehicles around them.
I think I'd agree that the output is, if not the most important thing, one of the most important things. But I think before we dig into that, I want to touch back on the other thing you said about you potentially annoying thousands of ADIs. Because maybe I've got a slightly different opinion here, I don't know. I annoy ADIs and PDIs regularly, you know, but I think in a slightly different way, because my approach to stuff has changed slightly. And I've told this story before, but I'm going to tell it again because I think it's relevant. And it was in my premium membership a few years back. I said something about, I will never use this company, I'll never use this organization. Didn't say anything beyond that, but I said that, and immediately got members messaging me saying why. And it made me realize that as someone that has a prominent voice, I hate saying that, prominent voice in the industry, I can negatively impact people's business and therefore their finances and welfare and livelihood. And I don't really want to do that. Mm. Now, again, there's exceptions to every rule. You know, if someone's out there being inappropriate with students, yes, I want to negatively impact them, you know, but if when it just comes to the business aspect, I don't. So I tend to take the approach of, as far as possible, I will showcase and promote best practice. Mm. Now, whether that's a podcast, whether that's a membership, whether that's just me personally, whether it's advice I pass on to instructors, I think that the best way to promote that outcome is to show the people that are doing it right and to lay that platform. That's why we're having this conversation today. And I'm not having that conversation with a person that might beep out now when I say, you know, that's why I do that. And it feels like some people, and I don't know if this is you, but you know, feel free to tell me if it is or it isn't, take a slightly different approach of, no, we're going to talk about the negative thing. We're going to criticize and do the opposite, essentially. I'm not saying I'm right. I'm saying that's my opinion. Do you take the opposite opinion? Are you more my way? Is there a balance here that I'm getting wrong, do you think?
It absolutely is the case that human beings are motivated by things that benefit them, and we switch off around things that, you know, that point out our weaknesses. It's why the industry is why I always, always, always push that this industry is focused in the wrong direction. We should not be delivering developmental training around fault. We shouldn't, because it doesn't work. We should be focusing on developing people's skill, knowledge, and understanding, particularly the knowledge and understanding of the things that they do well, the development that they've made. And so if I'm pushing a message out, then generally speaking, and I hope it comes across in the way I communicate on social media, that it tends to be pushed out around the benefits of doing something, the reasons why we should do something in a particular way, rather than being critical of particularly elements of the industry and their mindsets. So I think it's not for me to really sit there and tell people what they should think and how they should behave. But I do think at times that it's important to point out where change is necessary and important. And when I talk about impacting on other people, I think some of the things that I'm pushing for, granted, the chances are that nothing will ever change as a result, but I'm pushing for change, and if that change came about, it would have an impact on people, but it would be for the greater good, I have no doubt, at least potentially. And if we save one person's life, that's got to be worth people having to go through a bit of pain and suffering that isn't the result of somebody actually losing the life. It's the result of having to do a bit more training and, you know, spend a bit more money or a bit more time learning things that they should have been trained to do kind of in the first place. But I absolutely agree with you that jumping on somebody's, thought processes, somebody's practices, and being critical of them I think, first of all, I just don't believe it's the way to make change. And second of all, it just isn't something that I find in any way enjoyable.
I genuinely believe that bad instructors don't worry about how good the lessons are. You know, I think that everyone delivers poor lessons now and again. I'm sure that with all the training sessions you've done this year, I'm sure you can look back at someone and go, yeah, that wasn't my best. You know, we're human. But I think that people that just genuinely regularly deliver poor quality and don't care about it, they don't worry about how good the lessons are. So I think sometimes my other concern, and maybe I'm thinking too personally when I say this, but I'll be honest when I say it. My closest friend is imposter syndrome. I wish it wasn't, like, but it really is. And I will see videos on YouTube or TikTok or written posts or blogs or podcasts or any other kind of whatever form it is, and they will be talking about something negative, and I'm like, well, that's me. I'm rubbish. That's what I must do, you know. And it's like my brain goes to that. And I think I do sometimes worry that, and again, maybe this is looking at the exceptions, the rule, I don't know, but I do sometimes worry that there's a lot of people that fall into that category, because the ones that don't care about the lessons, well, either won't read it or they won't care when they read it. But the ones that do care, I often worry that they'll see that guy that does a TikTok video that says, if your instructor does this, then they're crap. And they watch that TikTok video and go, oh, well, I did that last week once. I must be crap. And actually, you know, I forget why I used this example recently, but I did use it, so I'm going to repeat it, which I saw someone on TikTok saying that if your instructor isn't using sat-nav, they're not teaching you properly. And I thought, there's a bit of truth to that. You should be using sat-nav on your lesson somewhere, but maybe the instructor just hadn't started using sat-nav yet. It doesn't mean they're not gonna. For whatever reason, they've decided it's not the appropriate thing to do yet. But it's really easy to get that learner in the car and go, blah, 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 sat-nav. And the other one I spoke about recently as well is when trainers that put videos on wherever they put them, whether it's TikTok, YouTube, their own channels, whatever, that's often, not always, but often you at your best. You know, when I, if I were to put out a video like that, it would be, this is, that's not always going to be that person's average lesson. You're seeing a curated thing for social media or for a paid platform like mine or whatever. You're seeing a curated thing. And then we get that image of, oh, that person's perfect. I'm not as good as them. And I think that's always a concern of mine, that we're creating an imposter syndrome if it's not already there, potentially.
I think, I mean, I say it on a semi-regular basis in workshops, but I do think we have to be really, really careful as trainers that, I always used the term unicorns and rainbows, that we're not making it seem like all of our lessons are unicorns and rainbows, because it's absolute nonsense. It's not the case. It won't be the case for any trainer. I don't care who you are. Even I'm going to use the name, I'm going to use two names because I just think they're both absolutely phenomenal. So I'm going to use Ray Seagraves and I'm going to use Stuart Lockery, and I'm going to say not every single one of their lessons, if they deliver driving lessons or the training sessions they deliver, will be unicorns and rainbows. That is just not the way life works. And sometimes unicorns and rainbows are people showing the exception rather than showing the rule. And I think going back to what you said about people posting things, such as, it's a very industry, it's just a trait of the industry, isn't it, for somebody to put things out there saying, if you're not doing it, or your trainer's not doing it, or, and really what I believe that is doing is them sort of hiding their own fears, their own insecurities, by attacking somebody else and trying to bring somebody else down. I don't know. I think it's another one of those things in this, you know, in this industry, that we talk about what's important in the industry, and I think we need to be a lot better at working together, being more aligned with other people. You know, it's not to say everyone's got to be the same and doing the same thing, because I think that there are different avenues to take in this industry. You know, it's my interest is something that's maybe a little bit more niche than the majority of instructors and what their interest lies in. But I think I'll put something out there, you know, like, for example, last week we put an outline of the proposal that we've prepared or that I've prepared to send to DVSA when we've got somebody to send it to. And that was met with 50% comments of brilliant, fantastic, and well done, and good luck with it, and 50% of I tried reading that and fell asleep, you know. Well, that's nice. I'm glad I helped somebody sleep. But, you know, really what that is their insecurities about something that they don't know about. And so rather than embracing and go, oh, there's something I could learn about, there's something that I could understand a bit more, instead of doing that, you know, and it's human nature, but people try and downplay it and ridicule it. And I just think overall that, I go back to conversations that we've had about how impressed I am with what you've done bringing the road safety sector more into our industry, because I just don't think there was an alliance there at all. But I do believe that there needs to be less fraction within the industry at large, and then also outer related things, you know, in the road safety sector, things need to be more sort of compatible, work together. When you're talking about the ultimate in driver safety, a safe driver, it's going to need a bit from there and 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 a bit of knowledge and understanding for the person that's largely responsible for that training from all of those places, you know, if we're ever going to get there.
I mean, just going back to the comment you made about that post, because I think that's really interesting. I mean, first of all, from the point of someone would actually comment and say, I fell asleep reading that. I'm like, well, because I just think, well, it's not aimed at you then. Mm. And we've spoke about this before, the difference in the way we articulate. I'm not a copywriter as such, but I've got a copywriting background. You know, when I write my Facebook posts or my social media, I write in a copy format. When I write in a blog post, I tend to write more formal, whereas you tend to write that kind of almost academic writing. And I can always spot a Lee Jowett post. I spot the Lee Jowett post where I see it's from Lee Jowett. And I mean that as a compliment because it stands out, but it's not going to be for everyone. And I think when we talk about what's important in the industry, I think it's important that we have these different voices. You know, we have the voice like yours that will go out and you know, bring in the psychology, bring in the data, and talk in a higher level. You know, the risk of sounding patronizing, that's not the intention, but talking that higher level. And then there's someone like me that dumbs it down a bit. And I know that on your workshops, you do bring that tone down a little bit. And that's not to say that you don't do the academic stuff, but I know you bring it down a little bit more, so it's more relatable. But I think that it's important that we have those different voices. And my concern at the minute around that is that what I'm seeing more and more of is just the ChatGPT nonsense. And I don't mean using ChatGPT as nonsense. I mean, ChatGPT written posts, you know, and I've held my hands up now and again. Well, no, I'll often write a post and I'll put it in ChatGPT and say, how would you improve this? Hmm. And sometimes it gives me some really good ideas. And other times it gives me nonsense. And occasionally I'll go on ChatGPT and say, write me a post. And I'll put a better prompt in than that, but I'll get them to write me a post and I'll go, that's good, but I'm changing this. Hmm. But I see so much stuff that is clearly written by ChatGPT. And I just think, right, I'm not going to go to that person now because I have no idea what they're offering. Mm. They're only offering what this AI has told them to offer. And I have no idea what they're offering. Is that a concern of yours? Or Is it now?
It's a concern that ChatGPT is going to take over the world. I tell you what I love ChatGPT for is I'll take like this concept here and I'll take that concept here and that already knows my interests. And I'll go, can you compare that with that? Yeah. And it'll go, yeah, well, it's similar because da, da, da. This method and this model here developed by this person here actually fits really nicely with this bit here because da, da. And so it's really great for that. But again, I think it goes back to, for me, you know, it's knowledge, experience, understanding. And I think what I like about when I do that is that what comes out the other end of it, I understand. Yeah. If what comes out the end of it, you're reading it and you don't understand it, probably leave ChatGPT alone and go and do some more work and some more research of your own. I think ChatGPT is useful, but it's very quickly becoming tiresome in terms of seeing people's posts. You can see ChatGPT a mile away. It has its uses, and my concern is that it knows more about me than it should. But it's very, very useful, I think, for running different concepts against each other and getting an outcome. That's where my interest in it is.
I think one of the things, in fact, advice for everyone listening is that if you go into ChatGPT, if you've been using it for a while, ask it to list. I'm being attacked by a dog at the minute for anyone wondering my voice is weird. But if you go into ChatGPT and ask it to list off your three biggest strengths and your three biggest weaknesses, if you've been using it for a while, that is a really interesting thing it comes back with. But the other thing I would suggest, and one of the things I use it most for potentially, is the deep research aspect. You go in and tell it what you want to find out about, and it'll go away and it'll give you like the research it comes back with. It will take me a week to do, and it'll do it in like 30 minutes to an hour, which is awesome. But yeah, I think that whether it's taken over the world is slightly different topic. But going back to what you said previously about the outcome, the most important thing being the outcome, what is the outcome we're after?
Well, safer roads, safer drivers, when we say we, you know, as an industry, you know, of course, DVSA, and ultimately what they're looking for is safe driving for life, of course. And so I don't say that with any sarcasm. But I think there are different ways, there are different methods and different roads to travel to get to that end result. But ultimately, what's important, I think, for anyone or for most people, the vast majority of people in our industry, whatever the beliefs are around how we get there, it's got to be safer roads as you know, the ultimate aim. And every other industry, you know, every other element is working. Every other element is having an impact. Safe road system. Every other element is having an impact. Are we yet? I'm not sure. We're creating the same drivers that we've always created. Are we having an impact on, you know, the human that's driving the car? The skill and the knowledge has always been the focus of the industry. It's always been delivered to a really, really high standard, I believe. But are we addressing the fact that we're delivering training to a human being? And are we doing that effectively? I don't think we're doing that. And until we start doing that effectively, we won't save lives. You won't save a life through skill, skills development, the transition of knowledge, because it's simply not the case that people die on the road as a result of a lack of skill or a lack of knowledge. You know, as and the example that I always give to highlight that is, you know, we do the workshops, we run through a KSI collision scenario, and we get them from the audience and, you know, from the delegates, and we always get the same answers, which tells me that we all know exactly what the issues are, and we all know exactly what causes collisions, and so therefore we know what we need to try and address. It boils down to, in the end, the last things that we cover are the types of roads and the car that this young person is driving when they have this collision. Because we teach car control on the road, and we should teach above that in terms of the GDE. Do I think that we do in general as an industry? No, I don't think we do in general as an industry. No. And what it boils down to ultimately, the example we always give at the end is that you could put that person in the same car, this overpowered car that these young people get that they can't control, that they shouldn't have. And they're on a rural road. You know, that's where they have those collisions, because they're pushing the limit. They can't control the car on that rural road. Level one's the car. Level two is the type of road that they're on. But then you put them in that same car on the same road on a Tuesday afternoon, taking the grand to bingo. Are they having that collision? No. Yeah. So the things that are assessed on the driving test and the things that we train people, and it's not that we shouldn't, because of course we should, but that's where we kind of stop as an industry, and not the things that are going to kill them. So until we get to a stage where we can actually effectively help people to see themselves as a driver, then we won't be saving any lives.
Quick reality check for you. When people hear membership, they usually picture one of two things: either loads of polished videos telling you how amazing the host is, or overly technical CPD that looks good on paper but never quite lands in the car. Well, premium is neither. What actually happens inside is honest conversations. Live sessions where instructors say, "I'm stuck." Discussions about confidence, boundaries, pricing, mindset, teaching psychology, the stuff that actually affects your lessons and your business. It's not gurus, it's not scripts, and it's definitely not pretending the job is easy. It's a space where instructors think out loud, challenge each other, and get better over time without being judged. Now, if you ever thought, "I wish someone talked about this side of the job," well, that's why Premium exists. Details are in the show notes if you want to explore it. So what are the things that we can and potentially should be doing to achieve the outcome? Now, not necessarily the things that we'd do in an ideal world, but the things that we can and potentially should be doing.
So the things that we can do that don't necessarily require, high level coaching skills and real deep understanding of human behavior and psychology, but just push beyond the knowledge and skill. What impacts on what people do, and thought processes, people's opinions on things, what's going on in the head at the time, in the moment, and most impactfully is people's emotional states and responses. One of the things that I hear quite regularly that I would push against is when my pupil came out and they were really upset because such and such and so. So we moved the lesson to next week. No, because they won't move their drive until next week when they've passed because they're in an emotional state. They won't do that. So my advice would be you're in a car with them. You can keep it safe for them. Get them to feel that way and move the car. Get them to experience it, you know, to its extreme if you can, and keep it safe. Because people need to see. What we need to be is a mirror to our pupils of who they are. A way of doing that in from lesson one will be your pupil moves the car for the first time. They pull up, they stop. Of course, get them to reflect on what they did, you know, what they did in detail. Feet, you know, what did they do with the feet that made the car move? Of course, they need to know what they're doing. If they're going to repeatedly do it well, they're going to develop the psychomotor skills. Get them to think about what the thoughts were in relation to what they were doing. What were they focusing on? You know, what were the thought processes at the time? What made it work? But how did those thought processes impact on what they did? I.e., what if you weren't thinking about that? Do you think you'd have managed to do that if you weren't?
Yes.
Get them to think about how they were feeling in the moment. The interesting thing when you do that is, let's say, for example, they say, how did that go? Yeah, it went really well. It went good, it went great, or whatever, you know, positive word. Is why I was found out how often people, what they said for how it went was the same as the words they used for how they felt. How did you feel at the time? Yeah, great. You know, how did it go? Great. How did you feel? Great. Terrible. But just raising somebody's awareness from lesson one, but I'm talking on a regular basis. And the thing that we have to do as an industry, the thing that we have to be better at as an industry is to not pull your pupils up because they got it wrong. Pull them up because they're going to reflect on it. Pull them up because it went brilliant. Pull them up because it went all right. Pull it up because it was the same as last time. Pull it up because it didn't go well. Pull it up because it was terrible. Pull it up because it was dangerous. Pull it up because it was perfect. You know, all of those things. A human being will need to learn to know the entire range of that spectrum for their own driving if they're going to be a safer driver. And the same things, you know, what were you focusing on at the time, how it went? But what were you focusing on? What were your thought processes in that moment? Do you remember what you were thinking about? Just as you lifted the clutch that time, you have to think about that driver that was reversing off the drive. Okay. So you weren't thinking about the clutch this time. Mm-hmm. You weren't thinking about the clutch this time. You weren't thinking about just lifting it slowly. No, I was thinking about them. Okay. What were you thinking? I better worry up and get out their way. Okay. How are we feeling? Well, I got a bit scared and then I panicked. If you do that on a regular basis, what that will do is it will make the link because those three things, the skill, the knowledge, the understanding, the thought processes, the opinions, and the emotional state, they're what's called intrinsically linked. Learning domains are extrinsically linked, means that you can't impact on one without impacting on the other. And so as a result of that, if you can create driver training that links all of those three elements together, when things go well, when things go great, when things go quite well, when things go pretty bad, when things are awful, then you will help to create a safer driver because they'll become more self-aware. Because what they do isn't in isolation. What they know and what they do isn't in isolation. It's the thought processes at the time. You know, we used an example in our workshops of, I hate this junction. We've all had pupils say that. Well, that thought process is coming in on the approach to that junction. Now, that thought process is going to build pictures in their mind. It's going to impact on their emotional state. And we all know what happens next to how it goes. So it's the same, you know, it's the same three elements, really, that if you're creating a reflective cycle around all three of those on a regular basis in every single lesson, you don't have to be an expert coach. You don't have to be a psychologist to do that, because ultimately what happens is after enough time, your pupils will go, "Oh, I'm too busy thinking about him and now I'm starting to panic. I need to calm down and think about what I'm doing. Otherwise, I'll get it wrong." And now you've created a safer driver. Yeah, it's a lack of awareness. It's that third column of the GDE matrix, really, that if we get really good at that, that's the way we'll create safer drivers, because of just a raised self-awareness, somebody who actually knows what impacts on them and the impact that it has on what they do, to the point where they can actually just instantly change it.
And I think there's a lot to touch back on there, but initially, I want to go back to the idea of, you said that someone coming out to the car upset and we send them away. I think there's a fine line there. We've got to make sure I get that right. But I'm going to relay an example from me. It wasn't an upset one, but it was a tired one. I remember she was in her 30s, this student I had, she, back in summer. She come out and she gets a card. She says, "I'm thinking I might be a bit too tired to drive today." And I thought about it for a second and I said, "Remind me why you're learning to drive again." And she told me her biggest reason for learning to drive was so she could take us to school and back. I said, "Right. And this is about the time you'll be taking up to school, isn't it?" She says, "Yeah." I says, "Would you take up to school if you're this tired?" And she said, "Yeah." I says, "So my question for you then," and I did load the question a little bit, I'll admit, but it was somewhat like, "So which one are you going to do? Are you going to not do this lesson and then not take your kids to school? Or are you going to learn how to take your kids to school when you're tired?" And we went, we learned how to take the kids to school when we were tired. And we actually had a really interesting conversation. I think we used the honest truth on that one as well. But we had a really interesting conversation about how to judge if you're tired enough to get to school or too tired to drive to school. And we went and did it and we're like, "Can you focus for 20 minutes? She's like, "Yeah, I reckon I can do 20 minutes to half an hour." I says, "Right, let's go do that." And it, "Can you focus for an hour?" "No chance." "Right, so we reckon you can get your kids to school, yeah. But could you drive to work after?" "No." And it was just really interesting looking at this. And I'm not perfect. You know, there'll be some people I have those conversations with that they don't stick with. But there'll be some people that it does stick with. And often it's the people that you repeat those conversations with, or in different contexts, but repeat those conversations. So do you think the key there and the importance isn't just the conversation, but I think you touched on this, it's the consistency of having those.
I think yes, that having one conversation with somebody around something, in one context is valuable and useful, but it doesn't in and of itself raise that level of self-awareness that they can see what's coming next, because they've seen it enough times and considered it enough times. Those bigger moments like you're talking about are absolute gold for us, though, because we don't always get them with everyone. And as you say, helping somebody in that moment to consider their options for later on, listen, it doesn't mean that they'll stick by it. It doesn't. We all have intentions. Behavioral intentions aren't always our behavioral outcomes, What's in the middle of intentions and the outcome is the interesting bit, because I'm tired and I got up late, but now I'm late getting my kids to school, I'm going to be late getting to work. So am I really going to leave the car having dropped the kids off at school when I'm already late for work? Is an interesting one. We can only make people safer. You're never going to make safe drivers out of human beings anyway. You can only make them safer. But in order to make them safer, it has to be that consistent correlation between not only what they did and what they know, but what motivated it. What motivated it? What motivated you to get that right? Well, I was thinking about the right things. I had my head in the right place. I was focused on the right things and I was feeling the right way. And just as a little bit of an add in to what you actually said, well, that's interesting, because it shows you how little we know of ourselves, really, when your pupil who's really tired feels like she can concentrate when she's really tired for 20 minutes. It's actually considered that a human being is capable of focusing for about 15 minutes of a 1 hour journey. So the idea that someone who's really tired, but this is the thing, we're only aware of what we're aware of.
Yeah, I don't know. I think the whole thing is, it's quite interesting. And I don't think it's that consistent. Like you said, those one-off conversations, I think, are gold. And the more you have them, the better you get at them as well. That's the thing. Because I can remember, you know, there's some conversations I've had that I'm just like, where on earth am I going with this? What is the point? And it's not even a conversation. It's just me ranting for 5 minutes. I'm like, this is just, this doesn't make sense. But it's that practice make perfect, isn't it? That, and I think, and do you know what? I think while we're on this, how do we get better at that? Because like you said, we don't have to be the world-class coach. We just have to introduce this. How do we introduce this? If this is something we're not doing, how do we start?
It just fits really, really nicely in with what's important. I think what's important is that as instructors, we give ourselves time. It's dead easy to try some at once. And like you just said with that conversation where you end up in a situation thinking like, where am I going with this? Yes. And then, you know, if that's like the first time you're trying to have that type of conversation, you've listened to the instructor podcast, you've heard somebody talk about something, you've heard your example, because I think I've heard you talk about that on the podcast, and then think, oh, and then your pupil comes out and goes, oh, I'm really tired. And you think, I'll try that conversation. And then you get to a point where you say, I don't even know where I'm supposed to be going. I just feel like an idiot. And you've recognized when you're doing all the talking, I think would be the first thing. Recognize when you feel like you're out your depth and just draw a line under it for now. Try it again with the next one. I think giving ourselves time to develop, it's dead easy, to sit there and go, all of my pupils, none of my pupils. We get this pushback on us a lot. Delivering workshops, all of my pupils will just say they don't know when I ask them that, which is interesting because, you know, I'm not being funny, but give me your pupils and they won't. So there's something there. But I've had time. I say all the time that I coached badly for the first 12 to 18 months that I did, you know, that I tried coaching, but I kept going with it because I could see the benefits of it. There isn't one answer, you know, that I can't give anybody one answer. But ultimately the answer is time, develop your knowledge and understanding and stick with it. I'm going to give a shout out to Nick Butters. I don't know if you've come across Nick on Facebook or anything, but he has gone through the most incredible transformation in the last 12 to 18 months because he decided that he wanted to learn more about coaching, to understand it better, and to, you know, try and make change. He's been an instructor for a lot of years, being an actual, you know, typical instructor. It's transformation. I mean, I just get random messages on Facebook from him now. But he, you know, he's fully ingrained in a coaching mindset. But he gave himself a year and he threw himself into, you know, changing his mindset. Once the spark was lit, he just fully engrossed himself in it. And his transition has been, I've done a few online sessions with him to, coach him, to give him a bit of a nudge in places and to point things out to him and to, you know, sow a seed here and there. But wow, you know, the development. But it's took time, you know. He's fully immersed in it for 12 months and now he's starting to see, you know, that everything's becoming clear to him. So that's been really interesting, but I think time is important and you also need, you know, you need to be open to it. You'll only ever develop anything that you're open to. You know, the two people that have come on our workshops over the 3 years that we've been delivering them, the two people, and there's only been two, so quite fortunate, but the two people that came with a closed mind, I'm going to guarantee you, were the ones that got the least out of that work or out of those workshops. So you need an open mind to things that you want to be developing. You need to give yourself time, and you need to really focus on developing your knowledge and understanding, gaining experience using, you know, anything that you're delivering. But there's loads of, you know, on the other side of that, finding the right people and getting the right information. But there's some fantastic people in and around our industry to develop. Lisa Dawn, Liz Box, Stuart Lockery, Ray Seagrave, Kev Field and Tracy Field. I don't want to leave people. There's other people that, for whatever reason, they're just a bit less prominent, but it's probably because that's what they want. Fiona Taylor, Terry Leftery, people like that. You know, there's some phenomenal people with a wealth of knowledge around, you know, different things. Diane Hall, and, you know, absolutely phenomenal wealth of knowledge. Julia Malkin, Dr. Julia Malkin, San Harper, you know, I could go on and on and on. I could go on and on. And if I've missed you out, I do apologize, because there are just that many of you that I could just spend time just discussing. But phenomenal, inside the industry, outside the industry. There's loads out there that you can dive into if you're open to it. You just have to be open to it.
See, I think an important bit there that you potentially almost brushed over slightly was that idea of not everyone's ready, you know, having a growth mindset or not. And again, we're talking specifically about what we can do here. So everyone, we need to remember that everyone's at a different chapter, and some of us are on different books, you know. So I don't necessarily look at someone that isn't embracing the shit. I don't necessarily look down upon them, because they're just not there yet. Eventually they will be. You gave the example of Nick Butters,
yeah,
who hadn't been for a long time, and then somewhat clicked, and he's open to it. Eventually we'll get there, you know, and this is a slightly different topic, but, you know, maybe that's why we need that regulation, because it shouldn't be optional. It should be mandated, but it's not mandated. So when we look at what we can do, I think that's our job. You know, and everything comes back to pro wrestling, right? I love pro wrestling. And there's a Mick Foley used to say that when he's in the wrestling ring, he used to ignore the kids because he's already won the kids over. Mm. His job is to win the dad over. So when we've got these people that are open and got this growth mindset, and they're listening to podcasts, they're attending courses, they're off to expos and stuff like that, we don't really need to talk to them. Mm. They're already here. We need to talk to the ones that are a bit further away. That's to me, that's what our job is. That's why I've done this podcast for 5 years. It's partly to inform people, but also to attract those people, the ones on the periphery. And even going back to what we were saying before, I think that's where that negativity fails, because that's not going to win them over. The people that are already won over don't care about the negativity because they agree with you. They'll agree. They're the ones going, yeah, great post, great post, great post. The ones on the periphery, the ones that then go, no, they're going to slap me off, I don't want to be here, are the ones further away out reading it. So I think that the important role of us, and by us, I mean that people that, again, I don't like the phrase, but have a prominent voice in the industry, is to talk to them.
Mm.
And I don't think, and I include all of us, including me in this, I don't think we're doing enough good of a job. I really don't. I'm not 100% sure how we do better. That's the problem. But I don't think we're doing a good enough job.
It's interesting that you say that, because while you were talking there, what went straight into my head was, yeah, definitely don't do a good enough job at that. I literally was sat there thinking that I really don't. Maybe that's something for me to look at and, you know, and understand, because it would be, imagine being the person that could influence those people. That would be something. Maybe that's something that I really need to look at. But 100%, I definitely don't do a good enough job of dealing with those people, helping those people, attracting those people, not getting frustrated with those people at times, you know. Those things I'm really good at, by the way. I'm really good at all of those things, actually helping those people and being someone that they can...
Well, when I think of it, I think part of the problem is that the people that are already on board, they're the easy target. You know, I'm not criticizing anyone at all when I say this. It's being honest. You know, it's quite easy to get those people to attend workshops, listen to podcasts, attend expo, stuff like that, because they're already bought in. So I think that's why a lot of trainers, whatever we want to refer to people as, target those people. It makes sense. But I think we need to go beyond that. And for me, it's about, maybe this is part of what I'm doing with the podcast, taking it away from that. It's part of the reason why I've never done that well-trodden path of let's just get so-and-so on to talk about so-and-so. Yeah. It's like, no, we're going to talk about this thing, because I'll keep coming back to those. Occasionally I'll do a Standard Checkup episode or a part three episode or whatever, because that will get someone listening, and then hopefully listen to another episode and so on and so forth. But I think that the more we put out there that isn't aimed at people that are already bought in, that is aimed at those people on the periphery, the more those people will see that. And it's just, to me, it's just being warm and open and embracing. Have you been considering this? Are you struggling with this? Is this something you find difficult? Do you hate this person? maybe this is somewhat, like you said, I need to go away and think of actually, but what, and we're talking there about what we can do as instructors. We kind of spoke a little bit about what we can do as a voice, if you like, in the industry. What about trainers and training organizations, which you are, in terms of helping achieve those outcomes that we want of safe drivers? Well, hell of a lot of people dead, ideally zero. You know, what's the important things or thing that we can do there?
And specifically in relation to, you know, people not dying, then we have to understand the causes, the contributory factors, and the fact that the vast majority, depending on the statistics that you use, somewhere between 90 and 95% of collisions, and particularly serious collisions, are the result of human behavior. It's not the lack of skill that causes the issue. It's not a lack of knowing what they should have done that causes the issue. It's the behavior in the build-up. And then, so we have to, if that's where we're going to be, if that's what we're trying to tackle, then I am firmly of the belief that the only way that we will do that is to raise awareness in new drivers of as to what motivates and how it motivates their driving behavior. You know, how are they as a person when things go well? How are they as a person in different contexts, i.e., you know, when things change around them, i.e., put four of the friends in the car? What are their motives for driving? What are the motives for life? Because those two things won't be that far apart. And how are they going to do all of the things they want to and keep themselves and everybody in the car with them safe? I'd love to add in additional things, like we need to be better at teaching this skill or that skill, or, you know, or we need to take them on these types of roads more, or, you know, multi-story car parks or McDonald's drive-throughs and stuff. And whilst I see the value to that in terms of a bump and a scrape and a scratch, and we don't want that for our pupils either. And we also have to accept that only, no, I can't say the word only. So yeah, edit that out or just accept that I shouldn't have said that. I really shouldn't, because when I say what, you know, when I say what I'm going to say next, it, but there were, what, 50 million drivers on the road and 1,600 people a year that die, you know? There are far more people have a minor bump and a scrape. Yes, that there are, you know, the vast majority of collisions that happen are minor bumps and scrapes. So that's not me saying that we shouldn't do those things, but it's me saying that it's not those things that are going to save, you know, the life of somebody. So if we're getting down to the ultimate aim of helping in some way, our industry helping to get to Vision Zero, then I can't see beyond that side, really, of the industry getting us there. It won't be more skills, you know. The one example that I always give is that they did studies in Norway, insurance companies. They looked at ways that they can bring collision rates down. It was in the early 90s. And they looked at developing people's skills so that they had fewer collisions. And they delivered a group of drivers skid pan training. And at the end of it, the intention was that it made them safer drivers. And what it actually did was increase the collisions by about 31%. So you give people the skills, they'll take more chances, they'll put the skills to the test. And ultimately, it would be, we are driving instructors. The way it should be is that we develop people's driving ability. Yeah, that's what it says on the tin. Unfortunately, there's nobody to do the other things, and developing the skill itself, the more you develop that skill, actually, the more likely somebody is to be involved in a more serious collision. So,
I think there is a big difference in there between developing a driver and developing someone that can drive a car. But I suppose specifically when it comes to trainers and those training organizations, do you think our role is to get that data, that in sometimes complex information, and filter it down to over instructors? Because when you look at the industry, it's full of independent driving instructors. So do you think that's our job to filter that through? Because in practice, you don't need a trainer to become an instructor. You could never have any training, qualify, never go for any training, and continue teaching. So even if we're doing that, there's still going to be people that slip through the cracks, if you like. But do you think that is a role we should be taking on, filtering that information through?
Yes, to an extent. I don't think it should be wholly the responsibility of trainers in this industry to filter down the important information to people. But of course, if that's not what we're doing, what are we doing? But I think I would love to be regulated by an organization that pushes me to be better, you know? Ultimately, is it not the role of the regulators of the industry to ensure that driving instructors are fully attuned with the GDE matrix? You know, we, knowledgeable, we raise people's knowledge and understanding of the GDE matrix. We go through it in our workshop. It's the starting point of the workshop, because we believe that once people understand where the issues lie, then it's easier to open the mind to where they need to go with the training. And then the next part of the workshop goes through how to impact on those areas. So of course, but we can only get to as many people as we get to. And in that sense, it absolutely 100% is my role to do that. Otherwise, what am I doing? When you take the industry at large, then we also have, you know, we have regulators, and we are a regulated industry. And the fact that probably 90% of driving instructors have either an extremely limited knowledge or no knowledge of what is considered to be every single element necessary to create safer drivers through driver education, then I'm not sure it's trainers that really are to blame for the fact that that so few, no one understand what's necessary to create a safer driver in the first place. That's before developing the skills to actually, to go and do that. So, I think it's a shared responsibility. I feel like I grasp that responsibility. I feel like as trainers, we need to grasp that responsibility. But if the industry in general is going to develop really where it needs to, then there needs to be more than trainers doing that and pushing for it.
Well, I think we're going to talk about the regulator later on, so that feels like a good point to stop this. So do you want to take a moment just to remind people where they can find you?
Yes, you can find us on social media, Knowledgeable Instructor Training, Lee Jowett Instructor Trainer Kit. You can find us via our website, which is www.adikit.co.uk. You can see us at the National Conference, which will be September next year. And you can come and see us at workshops all over the country, because we travel all over to make sure that we do what we can to help people to develop.
Cool. Well, thank you for joining me on this edition of In Conversation with Lee Jowett.
Thank you. It would be difficult if I didn't.
The Instructor Podcast with Terry Cook. Talking with leaders, innovators, experts and game changers about what drives them.